You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media. You had a really fun weekend that had nothing to do with cycling.
Nothing to do with cycling. Although it kind of did, because there was a bike valet, and that was really cool.
Did you ride your bike there?
You can ride your bike to the stadium, and then they have a valet there to take your bike and keep it safe while you watch the game, and then pick it up. And there were tons of people that used the bike valet, which was really, really cool to see. So
love it. Okay, well, you have to tell people what you did, because I know that everybody follows like Feisty Media Instagram, where I put your posts up, but maybe they didn't all catch them.
Kansas City Current women's professional soccer team played their first home match in the very first ever in the entire world stadium built for a pro women's team. So it's their stadium, it's their house, and they had their first game there on Saturday at noon was their kickoff. So it was fantastic. Yeah. Yep. It was very, very cool. And you know, on some levels, oddly, I mean, it was amazing, so I don't want to take anything away, but there were moments where I would pause and be like, I can't believe this is really the first one and it's 2024, you know, but, at least it's done and it's happening. So, sold out crowd. Amazing game. You know, it couldn't have gone any better. The weather was perfect. They scored the first goal. You know, the first goal in the stadium was scored by the Current, which was great. They won, which was great. They dedicated the halftime to the 1985 National Women's Soccer League team, and they were there. So they had the 85ers present to sign autographs and honor them on the course. The flyover was done by four women. I mean, they just embraced the whole celebration, being very woman led and woman focused, which was just, is very well done. So
that's amazing. And then you said, the best part of the stadium was there were no lines for the bathrooms.
I had to laugh because I was like, oh, this is possible.
So they just have four times as many women's.
You walked into the women's bathroom and like the longest I waited was probably a minute, maybe.
That's amazing.
And they had, you know, they had the attendant there that was, which, keeping, you know, they have that at the sporting games too, but keeping the bathrooms clean. And it was so funny because it was just very nice. And they have, like all of the things, they've done everything right. The everything is, it's very green footprint, you know. All the cups are reusable, recyclable. The food is all local vendors, mm-hmm. which is also really cool. So it's awesome. It's very well done.
I did see on social media that who's the Chiefs quarterback?
Patrick Mahomes and
so
Brittany
their
were
investors,
there.
They're mm-hmm. investors in the team, and that they were there, mm-hmm. which is really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yep. They were there.
A big supporter of women's sports.
Yeah. And Brittany, they do the countdown KC baby at the start of every game. I think that if there was anything I was a little bit disappointed in too, that was the other thing, was like Brittany talked and then they turned it over to Patrick to do the, you know, 1, 2, 3 KC baby. I get it. It's Patrick Mahomes. But I'm also like, Brittany's pretty cool chick in her own right. Like it could have been fun to have her do it.
I do see that. And at the same time, the most popular quarterback in the NFL is like, I'm like, that also says a lot, I think.
It's too, also really cool
about him being there and saying, I'm here to support women's sports.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It like sends
for sure
a bigger societal message, I think.
Yeah. It was cool. Yeah. And yeah, we won.
Yay.
So. And I took like my daughter, weekend. Which was also really just special.
You weren't that sad to be missing out on Mid-South for it.
I didn't miss out on Mid-South. Mason had a great race.
He did.
He finished at like 5 hours. He was like right up there in the mix
Wow.
with all of those. He raced with all those women. I was
He might
like,
have been
did
on
you
that
take a
train
pole?
that Lauren DiCrescenzo was pulling
No, he wasn't.
with the
He was in
train.
the chase group, but it was interesting to talk to him about it because he was like, well, I did help bridge some people, some women back to the chase group. And I was like, what'd you think? He's like, I understand both sides, you
Yeah.
know, like it's an interesting place to be
I
in
don't
those
think there's an
Mastart
easy
events.
answer to it, right? Like when we're doing mixed gender racing, I just don't know that there's an easy answer.
Well, I think it is that easy. That's the answer. It's like you can work with men and
Yeah.
men can work with women. Like that's the way it's set up right now. And I, fair or not fair, I don't know. It's the racing. So it's part of the rules. So I guess that's the part that I get confused at. And maybe that's because I'm not as competitive as some, but I'm like, it's the rules are that you can work together.
Yeah.
You know, so I
Yeah.
already heard people saying Lauren was being drug around by men. I'm like, I don't believe
Well, the
that.
picture I saw, she was dragging men around.
She was, I'm sure that there was work going both ways.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. Exactly.
anyway, that's the way it goes.
It is the way it goes. Well, I got to do a lot of riding this weekend because it was amazing weather here
Oh,
in
good.
Washington. And so it was very fun to be out. A group from my gym is doing Seattle to Portland. So we did some ride. I had my classic, like I had done this trail a couple of years ago. And I was like, there's some hills. Yeah. And I'm like, there's some brand new cyclists in our group. I was like, there's some hills, but it's fine. It's just like some nice rolling hills. I forgot there were some hills that like hit like 10, 8 and 10%, which is right, except for it might not have been the first group ride I took them on. Would have been that. But I did make everybody stop halfway. And I was like, how much water has everybody had? And have you had snacks? Because it was quite warm in Washington. It was but interesting because I'm usually like, as soon as I finish riding, starving, and I wasn't hungry. And I was like, I think that's because it was like way warmer. It's been a
Oh,
long
yeah.
time, so
Your tummy was kind of,
yeah.
yeah.
Then I woke up at 2 a.m. starving.
All right, give me a burger.
I know. I went and got a hitch put on my car today, and I was like, "Do I have time to stop at the burger place on the way back home before my next call?" I was like, "I don't think I do." So anyway, but yeah, it was super fun. But we get to hear a little bit of the inside scoop on Mid-South today from our guest. So we have Cecily Decker.
Good job,
I
Cecily
said it
Decker.
correctly.
Nice
I
work.
made
You
Christy
did
do the
say
intro
it
because I was like, I'm gonna screw this up.
right.
And she gives us all of her scoop, being pretty new to the field. And like she comes from skiing and had a pretty horrific accident and then came back and is now a cyclist. So I think y'all are gonna enjoy getting to know her a little bit. So we'll get on to our interview.
Hey all, it's your editor Lindsay here. I want you to get ready to ante up for the Ultimate Gravel Challenge this summer. Join us at the 2024 Trans Rockies Gravel Royale, where adventure awaits in the breathtaking Canadian Rockies. Experience the thrill of a unique 3-day stage race surrounded by stunning scenery on secluded gravel roads in the British Columbia backcountry. With two distance options, the full pint or half pint distances, there's a challenge for every level of rider. And forget about logistics, Trans Rockies has you covered. Fully supported with tents, meals, aid stations, technical support, and even massage services, so all you have to do is focus on the ride. You'll stay at the picturesque Nipicka Mountain Resort, nestled in the heart of the Rockies, and celebrate your achievements with daily podium awards, group dinner, and custom design memorabilia. After the ride, you can unwind at Chillville with cold refreshments, music, games, and camaraderie with your fellow riders. Don't miss out on this epic adventure. Register now at transrockiesgravelroyale.com and use the code GGG24GR100 to save $100 off your entry. The link and discount codes will be in the show notes of this episode. Embrace the challenge, conquer the gravel, and create memories that will last a lifetime. So go all in with us for Trans Rockies Gravel Royale this August.
Well, nothing like pressure. So
I've screwed up too many names. I was like, I'm not doing it anymore.
Catherine's recruiting me back to the intro spot. So we have Cecily Decker joining us, and she still has a little bit of Mid-South in her hair.
Hopefully not. I think I got it all out by now. It took a couple showers, so.
I bet. It looked really dusty.
It was probably one of the dustiest races I've ever done. Yeah.
Did you have trouble seeing the lines and stuff, or were you just following the butt in front of you?
My eyeballs were pretty irritated and sore, but I could see pretty much the whole time. And then, yeah, I was following a lot of wheels most of the day.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, was it the party that everybody says the Mid-South is?
The part of the race I was in definitely wasn't a party, but I would say the before and after had a really cool vibe.
Nice. That's Did you awesome. Stay for the DFL, the dead fucking last party?
I was going to, but I fell asleep before it. I really wanted to.
I know. It seems like such a great idea. And we have another podcast called Iron Women, and those races end at midnight. It's kind of unbound. The last finishers are coming really late. And so the first finishers have plenty of time to go take a long nap. And then come back for the finish line. And that's not quite enough time between when you finish and last to really get some rest in.
No, I can't even imagine spending that long out there. I already did my race and couldn't make it until the last person. And that person was riding their bike the whole time. It's just, yeah.
That's big craziness.
Kudos to everyone out there that completes that.
Well, I feel like we jumped way ahead with my intro.
We did.
So I guess we need to kind of go back to how we traditionally start this. And Cecily, tell us a little bit about what brought you to the bike and what's your journey been like?
Sure. So I guess my mom was kind of the one who introduced me to biking in the first place. And that was sort of because she used to road bike. So when I was about 14, she got me a road bike. And we were kind of going out together. But I was actually a ski racer from the time I was 6 years old until my college years. So I always had used biking sort of as training for skiing. And then I had a pretty bad knee injury, which is what ended my ski career, and sort of a way that I moved through that and kind of moved on from skiing was just spending a lot of time riding by myself on my bike.
And you were saying Bozeman, you moved to Santa Fe recently from Bozeman. Was Bozeman home? Is that where you grew up? Or
yeah, I'm actually from the Northeast originally. I'm from a small town called Saranac Lake, which is right outside the Olympic Village of Lake Placid.
Lots of
really big winter sport area. I ended up on the U.S. ski team in my teenage years, and then following kind of my knee injury and moving towards the end of my ski career, I was recruited to go to Montana State to ski race.
What kind of skiing did you do?
Alpine skiing. So earlier on, I was more of a speed specialist, so the downhill and super G disciplines, which are, if you're familiar at all with ski racing, it's the two that are faster and straighter and probably a lot scarier.
Yeah, it's and hurt a lot of knees.
Yeah, the thing, as you move more into the speed disciplines, the crashes are a lot more consequential, which is kind of what happened to me. I got hurt in a downhill race, so it was going off of a jump about 80 miles an hour. And when I landed, my right leg was kind of, my ski was perpendicular to the hill. So it basically exploded my knee. It was a really, really long recovery to come back from that. And in hindsight, I never really got back to where I was. but I spent about 5 years ski racing following that. And then I sort of moved more into the technical disciplines because I think after that crash, I had this sense of fear that I never really had before. And it made it a lot harder to go huck myself down downhill courses the way it used to.
That verb just kind of does it all. Huck yourself.
8 miles an hour, I would imagine. Did you end up with like a head injury or a concussion from that?
Yeah, almost certainly. But at the time, it just like the primary concern was my knee for sure.
Oh, it's like a repeat story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like so many women with concussions that don't get like diagnosed properly. But obviously the knee was a huge focus if you crashed on it that hard.
Yeah. I mean, like that was definitely like my kneecap was like on the side of my leg. And like, I spent like the subsequent 2 weeks in the hospital after that. So like, yeah. It was definitely like as time went on, I was starting to notice like the kind of more secondary injuries to that. But like, yeah, the knee was the big one.
So what year did you kind of switch over to cycling then away from the skiing?
So in 2019 is when I went to Montana State. And at the time, I was just competing in giant slalom and the slalom disciplines. And going into the start of that year, I started to get a lot of pain in my knee. I went in for an x-ray, and the doctor told me my cartilage was gone. I was bone on bone, and I'd never do another sport again, basically. So sort of moving towards the end of that year, I finished that season. And then this was like right when COVID started. So I ended up getting a call from the team doctor and they told me that they were medically retiring me. So I wasn't going to be able to ski race for them anymore. And yeah, I guess both to kind of like deal with the disappointment, and really just because it was the only thing I could do without pain, I was just riding my bike like a crazy person for a while. And it really just kind of helped me move through that. And the following year when I went back to Montana State, I was really just like, you know, like a little lost, like looking to fill like this huge new void in my life. So I sort of reached out to who was running the cycling club at the school, and it turned out there was really nobody in it and the president was leaving. So when she went out, I just decided that
you were in charge.
Yeah, I just somehow ended up taking over as president and then sort of got like a good group of people together that wanted to ride bikes. And I started doing collegiate racing in the spring of 22, I think. Yeah.
Very cool. And did you, I'm guessing, you know, just Sarah?
Yes, we were actually teammates on our Pinarello team last year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't
but know I never made it up to her race, which was a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really sad I left Montana before getting that.
Before going there?
Yeah.
That's a beautiful race. Year.
It is. Yeah. How did you, like, that's going to be a lot to hit you, both being told you're done, like, with your career that I'm sure you had bigger ambitions for, and a pandemic at the same time. Like, how did you deal with that?
Yeah. I guess, like, that time I was back home with my family, but one of, like, the hardest parts of that all is, like, I really needed to, like, get surgery on my knee, and I sort of ended up just putting it off for months because you couldn't really like
feel comfortable
going to the hospital. Yeah, so like honestly during that time I think the physical trauma and pain of leaving skiing was more forefront. And then kind of as the months went on, I started realizing the mental side of it more.
Yeah. So when did you end up finally getting the knee surgery then?
So I guess it would have been December 2022. I had,
oh, wow.
It's called an osteotomy. It's actually like a pretty intense surgery. I went to hospital for special surgery in New York, and basically all the damage in my knee is in the lateral side. So what they do is they cut my femur in half and basically realign my leg to take the pressure off of that side. So that whole following year, I had a huge plate screwed into my femur, and then I had that removed, I guess, right before I started bike racing.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. That's intense.
Yeah. And like for me, it was never really the plan to get like as into biking as I had. Like, I really like was done with sports, and like the whole point of that surgery was just kind of to get it so I could walk live comfortably, yeah, and live a normal life until like the appropriate time to have a knee replacement. But obviously things went a lot better than I could have expected.
Yeah, what gave you the nudge to go pro? Like, I mean, you were, did you place fifth, is that right, last on Saturday?
I did, yes.
Is that where you landed?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a deep field.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I don't know, like a lot of it was my partner. He kind of like was the one who sort of like encouraged me to start gravel racing. Mm-hmm. And probably I owe a lot to him for getting into it. But yeah, my first gravel race was Rebecca's Private Idaho. And I just kind of did it because it was close to home. And he kind of encouraged me a lot to go do that.
Very cool. We're taking a big group out there this summer. I'm excited to experience it.
Oh, it's super cool. Like, yeah, to do that as my first gravel race, like it sets the bar pretty high for expectations. But yeah, it's super cool. Like the area is just so beautiful too. And to be able to race over 3 days and kind of have that like day off in the middle, it just makes it a super cool experience for sure.
Yeah. And then you're on the Scuderia, the Pinarello Scuderia. How did that come
about? I guess so in 2022, I did like two gravel races. And then I think it was Whitney Allison who actually recommended me to Kim Rogers, who runs our Scuderia program. And she reached out to me right before last season. And that's sort of when I decided to do like the full gravel program last year.
Mm-hmm. And is this your first year in the Grand Prix, or were you in it last year?
This is my first year. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What made you want to be in the Grand Prix series?
I guess over time, like as I've been racing, I've found that I really like the more technical gravel races and the mountain biking as well. So I think the races suit me well. And honestly, just right now, like it's the most competitive off-road racing in the US.
Yeah,
cool.
It absolutely is. It's going to be an exciting year.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's also, it's just really like both just crazy and inspiring how much deeper the women's field has gotten recently. Like there's kind of always been that top end speed, but it's just like, the depth is really impressive now.
Yeah. I'm curious, coming from ski racing where women have been, you know, like at the top for so long, I feel like in ski racing, like just you think of Olympians and you think of a lot of women, and in cycling, women for so long were kind of like a little overlooked. Like, is that, what are you seeing as you're coming into this sport at this level?
No, I definitely notice it. For ski racing is actually pretty unique, where the prize money is pretty equal for men and women. And like for the US, our biggest kind of superstars in this sport have been mostly women: Lindsey Vonn, Michaela Schifrin. And definitely as I went into cycling, it's a little bit like shocking when I was first showing up to races and it's like there's not really women racing, and then it's overwhelmingly a very male dominated space even on the amateur side as well. So I think it's just, yeah, I noticed a difference in all levels of the sport, like from the amateur level to the pro level, it's just more male dominated. And that all kind of trickles down from the top and the people who are getting exposure in the US.
I hope we're working towards fixing that.
I mean, like even just in the really extremely short time I've been doing this, it's been really awesome to see how much it's increased on the female side, both the number of people doing it professionally and the number of people that are interested in it and watching it.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, and we've talked about this a million times on this podcast, but once people start to get to know the women, like your stories are mm-hmm. so much more incredible. Like you came back from hitting the ground at 80 miles an hour and having your femur cut, and now you're racing. You know, like this guy at my gym, he's pretty new to gravel, but he's like a massive Lauren DeCrescenzo fan, because he's like, she's so inspirational, her story of coming back from this concussion. And like, you just don't have those same stories, I feel like, on the men's side. And I think people relate to that. And they love those, they love seeing people that are more full people. That's a way to say it. That's probably not the right, but you know what I mean? Like, it makes for very loyal fans, but they have to, like, it's giving them the opportunity to get to know you, I think, is the step that's a little bit harder sometimes on the women's side.
Yeah, I think one of the bigger things too now, it's just like people in the past that have maybe thought, oh, like women's racing's boring, and like made sentiments like that. Like, it's just like, it's not boring. It just really hasn't been shown, or like there's nowhere you've been able to see it. And now that it's kind of more mainstream, like people are able to see that it's definitely not boring. Like, we have the same talent and a lot of like really cool stories, just like the men's side does. It's just people now getting to see it.
I think the stories are better, actually, but
yeah.
I'm probably a bit biased, but I think, you know, that's the coolest part of watching the women.
Well, then what, like, when you think about the racing this year, and have you done any of the races in the series? Did you do them last year?
I did most of them, yeah.
Okay, so you kind of did your own version of the Grand Prix.
Yes.
Last year.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like, what does it feel like to be kind of now an insider in that women's field? Because I do know what's cool is it becomes a race within the race, right? Which I think has made it really fun, is like, it's not just about who is for like the top podiums at a race. It's like how people are placing, see people sprinting for like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th position, because they want to get those positions higher in the Grand Prix. And so like, yeah, what are you thinking and how are you approaching this season with those things in mind?
Yeah, I mean, the first and foremost way things are different this year is honestly just logistically and financially, just having an entry and like being in these races just makes things a lot easier for me. Like, as far as the races themselves, I think everyone's kind of like waiting to see how it's going to play out with the women's only start. No. So I think one thing we will see is, I think we're going to see more sprint finishes, and like the women are going to be a lot closer together.
Yeah, I think that'll be really exciting.
Yeah.
To see within that.
I would like to, I think a no drafting rule would be interesting for some races as well.
Yeah. Do we know where Lifetime is on that, Christy?
I'm not saying anything.
There was a rumor that came out in some publication.
Yeah, I mean, just like,
I just didn't know if I missed an announcement.
I understand, like, there's a couple races that it would be, like, really hard to implement, like Leadville, like, when you're just kind of, like, stuck on, like, the double track or, like, the more mountain bikey sections with the men. It's like, okay, like, maybe, like, one way they could do it is, like, make different sections of the course, no drafting, or... There's definitely some things they could do to make it more fair. But right now, as it stands, like the way I read the rules, if I had no shame and I really wanted to, I could go hire a couple guys to like come ride with me in all these races. And I just think as it gets more professional, they need to make like those rules a lot more clear. Like, I don't think there's anybody that would do that right now, but the fact that you simply could do that is a little worrisome, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it starts to play out. I loved there was a picture that came up on Instagram. I think it was Mid-South's Instagram. It was Lauren pulling a train of like 8 guys.
Yeah.
I was like, I love that. which I'm sure she pulled, like they were switching off, right? But
yeah, no, it's good when you get a well-timed picture.
Like yeah, when you get the picture and you're the one up front.
I'm sure she was pulling a lot too, but it's good they captured it.
Yeah. Which one of the events are you the most excited about?
Not necessarily because it's like a good race for me, but I really like Leadville just because of the area and like it's the type of ride I would want to go do if I just like wanted a proper adventure. So it's just, for me, it's a really cool race. Like the history of it is obviously really deep too. I really like it up there.
There's very little air.
Yes.
how high is Santa Fe?
I live at 7,200 feet.
Okay, so you get a little bit of that benefit, not as quite as much, but
yeah. And then like
better than sea level.
Most of my training is between 7,200 and 12,000, really. So I'm definitely like acclimated
to that.
Yeah,
you're like, yeah. Send me to Leadville.
Yeah.
I want to hear about Santa Fe riding because I went out on a girl's birthday weekend a few years ago and I freaking loved Santa Fe, and then we went up to Taos. I was like, I love this area.
Nice. Yeah, the mountain biking here is actually really, really good. One thing like I've noticed, it's like the outdoor community here is not as big as it was in Bozeman, so it's just like the trails are empty, which is kind of cool. But
for training,
yeah,
don't worry about anybody being in front of you with intervals. Yeah, it felt like a very how do I say this, retired community.
Yes. Yeah, that's fair.
And very artistic, like I would imagine there's a lot of like retired artists or people,
yeah,
that, you know, that's what it felt
for me. Like it feels very undiscovered for like the biking. And
you better watch out that it like, might become the next big thing.
It might. Everywhere is nowhere safe anymore.
Nowhere safe.
You're like, where's the next big thing? I'm gonna go start buying houses.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
And then what brought you down there? Was it your partner or y'all were ready to go out of cold?
So he works remotely, and so we both were just kind of like wanting to try something different new. And like really somewhere neither of us had ever really been. So we just kind of like came down here and checked it out and decided to come try it.
That's awesome. Right. Yeah. I love Santa Fe. It's a cool zone and you can pop down to, I mean, it does stay fairly chilly there in the winter because of the elevation, but
it's cold, but it's dry. So
yeah,
It's like it's really good for riding as long as you don't mind a little cold.
A few extra layers.
Yes.
Do you still ski at all?
Yeah, I do a lot of uphill skiing now. I actually do some SkiMo racing, which it's short for ski mountaineering. It basically is like you skin up and go down several times. And
that
it's
stuff makes
more,
me really fit.
it's brutal. It's like, I would say it's more painful than bike racing is. So doing that over the winter, like
good cross training. Now you're using skiing for cross training for your bike racing.
It makes it less shocking going into the season for sure.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, I'm sure mentally it's good for you too, right? To have a break from the bike sometimes.
I like, it's really awesome. Like for me, like obviously I'm still like competitive when I'm doing it, but it's like I'm going out there and it's like I can be competitive but not really like care as much about the result. Like it's kind of cool also just to like not specifically like train or like target for like different races. Like I never go do intervals on my skis. Like anytime I'm going, it's like I don't have a set workout. It's just for me, and being able to race and like not have that stress is nice.
Awesome.
I'm sure you do still quite well the racing.
Yeah, I do. Probably my worst discipline in it is the vertical of just going up, but I've found that the ones with the more technical downhills, I can kind of make up a little bit of time. It's a really funny sport because a lot of the people who get into it come from a running background and not really a skiing background. And the skis you're on are just like these little like sticks of carbon. They're like not conducive for skiing on at all. It's just like you kind of make it down on them. So these people, the people that come from running and don't really grow up skiing, have to go down.
They're
some,
terrified.
Yeah,
down. They're right. Yeah. It's like the equivalent of riding your brakes.
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah, I know several triathletes that do that in the winter. Like, just again, same thing. Like, a lot of for them, it's the good run training with giving them their bodies a little break from running. So, sorry, my dog is like pacing.
Ready to go out.
It's just really, it's really funny. He's like,
he's
not happy with
he's
me.
He's annoyed with you
cycling
right now.
All weekend. He's so annoyed with me. Well, very cool. I really enjoyed getting to know you a little bit and hearing about your like, oh, that coming overcoming that knee injury, coming into cycling. That's amazing.
Thank you.
If people want to find out more about you or follow you, where can they go?
I am on Instagram and I'm also on Strava. I'm probably better on Strava than Instagram as far as like being able to see what I'm actually doing most days.
Yeah. And if they want to follow you on Instagram, what's your handle?
I'm at Cecily_Decker.
Awesome. We will have Lindsay put that in the show notes as well.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.